it's Wednesday the 17th of April. I'm Miranda Sawyer and I took my Rolls-Royce swimming in Dubai. Welcome back to Papercuts, the modern newspaper review, where we put the UK press on the couch and analyse its dreams. The Telegraph dreamt of something naughty about Alison Pearson and Liz Truss. The Mail had a nightmare that Meghan was queen and everyone liked her. The Eye woke up screaming about the pension triple lock, and the Star didn't dream about anything because the Star never sleeps. And if you're awake in the middle of the night, why not pass the time by sending a message to three of your friends with a link to papercutshow.co.uk and tell them why you like us. Not your mum, though, because she won't have her phone on silent and she'll get in a right old tiz. Anyway, let's see if they subscribe. Now, here are the headlines for today's show. Busy Lizzie, Liz Truss has written a book and she's everywhere. Polly Chiller, there's a 20-person love-in in America and we've all got the ick. And Posh Crush, Victoria Beckham is 50 and the papers are going mad. Welcome to Papercuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Papercuts, where we'd love to make jam, but we've got an actual job. I'm Miranda Sawyer, and joining me today is New Statesman writer and proud author of brand new book, A History of the World in 47 Borders. It's John Ellidge. Hi, John.
Hello. I've got some bragging about the new book, if I'm allowed.
Come on, brag away.
You know Stanford's, the map-based bookshop?
Yes.
It is their book of the month for May.
That's wow. A big deal.
I'm really excited. My granddad used to take me to Stanford's, and this is like the most exciting thing to happen to me in ages.
Hooray. So. That's absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. And also with us is comedian and proud person in brand new fun podcast Dial F for Football. It's Fergus Craig. Hi, Ferg.
Hi, guys.
So what have we got on the front pages today? John, you've got the broadsheets.
I do. So The Guardian leads with Tory divisions exposed as Sunak smoking ban moves a step closer. As a smoker, which I can say now because I finally came out to my mum, I think this is probably a good policy. I just wish they'd applied it to everyone, including me. Mm. Over in The Telegraph, different angle. Leadership hopefuls defy Sunak over smoking ban. Next to a picture of Nigel Farage doing his best impression of Donald Sutherland at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers there. The Times is still ploughing its own furrow with police look at multiple allegations over Rayna.
Mm. I'm worried about Angela.
I wish they'd piss off and leave her alone.
Me too.
We were talking about Nick Bowles' lovely letter to the Times, mm-hmm. in which he basically said, piss off and leave her alone. And he's a former Tory MP. But no, they still seem to think they can get her. Finally, The Eye, joyous as ever, Sunak gives Netanyahu a warning from world leaders.
Okay, I'm sure that went down well. Right, Ferg, what do you have?
I've got The Sun, which has a story about Kyle Walker. Kyle's a dad. For sixth time, he's still not quite reaching Boris Johnson levels, but he's doing his best.
Yeah, I'd just like to say it's a girl, and two, it's to his wife that he's currently split up from, but apparently he was at the birth, although I don't think the son knows that, really.
Okay, press the red button for more. The Daily Mail has a victory for the bravest head teacher in Britain. That's that lady that we keep seeing, Catherine Burbelsing. She has won the right to ban Muslim prayer rituals in her school.
Is that what she's being brave about? Mm. Being randomly horrible to Muslims? Mm-hmm. Jesus fucking Christ.
I've got the Daily Mirror, the Sig Free Generation that's on that new smoking ban. I can't explain it. I can't rationalise it. But there's just something that I find sad about children not being able to smoke anymore. I just feel like I'm losing the country right now.
And that's why you voted for Brexit.
I don't understand. I can't explain it, but I don't know. I just feel like, really? And now children can't smoke. And finally, the Daily Star brought back their lettuce, which of course famously beat Liz Truss. Lettuce Liz, plucky Daily Star lettuce is part of evil London elite.
I have to say that the Daily Star, every headline is a banger, so that's a great headline, but there are other little ones as well, aren't there?
Yes, there's a picture from Irie being served with the headline, Britain facing pussy crisis. We don't need to read to find out more. There's a picture of Greg Wallace with the statement, "I deserve a statue." And there's a picture of Harry and Meghan with their eyes blacked out, as the Daily Star does these days. Publicity shy royals now flogging jam.
It's a gift, isn't it? Now, as the front of the Star makes clear, Liz Truss is back, back, back with her provocatively titled book, 10 Ways to Wear a Vest. Oh, no, sorry, 10 Years to Save the West. In it, she explains why it all went wrong when she was in government and how actually it wasn't her fault. John, you've read at least some of this, haven't you? What's she on about?
I mean, can I start by saying, did you see that advert the Labour Party put on Twitter yesterday, which is literally just a clip of Liz Truss saying, "I have unfinished business," ooh, done like a horror film, which is the best argument you could make for the Labour Party at this point in history, isn't it? So, yeah, there's some absolutely incredible material here. There's the fact when the Queen dies, she writes, her first thought was, "Why me? Why now?" Which is, firstly, as the writer Paul Kirkley pointed out, that's what Julia Davis's character in Nighty Night says when her husband gets cancer. And it's a clue that she's a psychopath. Liz also complained at some length that Ocado won't deliver to 10 Downing Street.
Yeah.
That she had to organise her own hair and makeup, which I think actually that's a reasonable... I think it is probably not something you should have a Prime Minister worrying about, really. She launched a broadside against Dylan the dog on the grounds that number 10 is infested with fleas, but there was no conclusive evidence it came from the dog. So it possible it was Carrie. There's some great quotes floating around. It's like, "I'm gregarious and I like people, but even my best friends wouldn't describe me as a great people manager." Or to put it another way, from her biography from a couple of years ago, Out of the Blue by James Heal and Harry Cole, which magnificently came out a few days after she'd stopped being Prime Minister. There was a quote from her in that, which is, "I am weird and I don't have any friends."
Wow.
But the overwhelming message, the single thing that she wants us to take away from this, is that none of it is her fault.
None of it?
No. Would you like me to list the people whose fault it was?
Oh, go on. Yeah, go on.
There's the Office for Budget Responsibility, the European Convention on Human Rights, the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England, the experts who wouldn't support her agenda, the London dinner party circuit, the deep state, the Supreme Court, the Environment Agency, Natural England, Joe Biden, trans activists, environmental extremists, the global left, and the Financial Times. There are a couple of dozen more, but that gives you a flavour.
Yeah, including The Star, I imagine.
The Star is on there. Yeah, actually, I think under the circumstances, given that The Star probably did more to bring it down than anyone else, I think they've got off quite lightly.
It's very true. I mean, she is an odd character, isn't she? I listened to a political podcast yesterday in which the journalist was trying to get her to admit that the budget was a bad idea, and she just won't. She just won't accept it was a bad idea.
So I do actually have a theory about this, which is like, you know the way, like, you're never going to get Tony Blair to go, "Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have invaded Iraq." I think it's because, like, you know, it wasn't about oil or power politics. He meant it. He thought he was helping people. So if he ever admits it was the wrong thing to do, he's going to be crippled by the knowledge that everything that followed was his
fault.
Own. Yeah. Mm. And I think there is, I think Liz Truss is the sort of economic version of that. I think it's like, it is too big a thing to admit to herself that maybe she's been wrong for 30 years.
Mm. I mean, would you buy this book, Ferg?
I bought some weird shit in my time. I mean, I'm interested to read it. I'm fascinated by Liz Truss. I think she's such a case study of a damaged person. Mm. My theory is that she was probably bullied at school very badly.
Well, she joined the Liberal Democrats, so that tracks.
Yeah.
And as she says, "People don't like me, I'm weird." She's rationalised that as "people don't like me, either because of or but I am very smart." Mm. And that was affirmed again and again through her life as she rose. And then she was Prime Minister and everything fell apart. So if she lets go of the idea that she's very
special,
smart, and that, like, what she thought should be done was a huge failure, if she lets go of that, then, you know, it all crumbles. So it's just a case of another case. We had two of them in a row of very damaged people being in power. She's like a sort of... Like, I love Married at First Sight Australia. Just the people on that who are just like, how do these people function in the real world? How do they function outside
reality
of
telly.
A reality show? And you think, and you watch it and you think, oh, this must be editing. This must be the producers guiding them towards this.
But it's not.
But it's not. It's just, well, maybe it's like Tufton Street guiding them towards it. I don't know.
Yeah, there's always a case of reality television that you think they're really entertaining, but you wouldn't want them in your living room.
Yeah.
And it's the same with her, isn't it? You are right. She's just a terrible reality show person that somehow ended up being prime minister.
If you have not been popular all through your life, if people don't like you and you were bullied, I mean, then somebody invites you to join a club called the Popular Conservatives. Yes,
Popcorn.
Please. Yes, please.
It is your equivalent of a pop group. Oh, God. Now, in the New York Times magazine, a place we don't usually go for our newsy fun, is a newsy fun piece about a 20-person polycule. What do you mean you don't know what a polycule is? The name comes from polyamory and molecule. What do you mean you still don't know what a polycule is? John, can you explain what is a polycule?
Not for the first time, can I point out that it is 10 o'clock on a Wednesday fucking morning? And this is what we're talking about. Okay, the word polycule is a portmanteau coming from polyamory, which means having multiple romantic relationships, and molecule meaning, you know, lots of connections. It seems to have popped up around 15 years ago to refer to an intricate structure formed of people with overlapping attachments, some of which are romantic, some of which are sexual, some of which are platonic. Basically, it's shagging around, but in a woke way where you won't stop talking about it.
Oh, God. So it's friends with benefits with a microphone.
It's friends with benefits with other friends with benefits with other friends with benefits.
Right.
It's a lot of fucking admin. It just sounds so... just why do they need to talk about it?
There's an entire article about it.
People have spent the whole of human history having inappropriate sexual relationships with people they're not married to. Why do they need to talk about it in the New York Times magazine?
Yeah, it's an interesting article, isn't it, Ferg? Mm. I mean, you know, basically what the article does is you just get quotes from people in the manner of a pop music history where they kind of go, OK, you know, I started it because of this and this is what happened. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's just the modern, woke, middle-class version of sort of 80s swingers.
It's just a little...
I consider myself, like, quite progressive, but... just like, you know, I think, you know, it was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Eve and Esther and Marcus.
But there weren't enough people. That's why they would have been otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is, I mean, you know, some of it I think, yeah, sounds great. You know, there's a lot of kind of different types of people in there. They all seem to be enjoying themselves. It's just the smugness and the weird words, I have to say. I've got a bit of a problem with the weird words. Shall I read some of the weird words and then you can guess what they are? Mm. So they've got, this comes in a sentence here. He's married and his wife and I are metamores. Have you got an idea what a metamore is?
I don't know, but I think you should put cream on it.
A metamore is a partner's partner. There's at some point an agile scrum comes up, which I have to say, that does sound fun. And then polysaturation.
That's margarine.
No, it's actually just too many people to think about. One woman basically says three is her polysaturation because basically she kind of likes long-term committed relationships. So that's three long-term committed relationships and then shagging on the side. I don't understand how they have time to do any of this. And then the other one is compersion. Do you want to know what compersion is?
Sure.
That's the enthusiasm.
That's happy seeing your partner happy with one of their other partners. So it's like, go on, love, you're doing great. I mean, there are some bits that are very almost sad. Or,
oh, I've got a sad quote.
Yeah.
The men are important. They do have value.
That's it. Yeah. There's also a woman who says, my husband and I are very, very different, which is our strength. He's a frat bro who loves sports. That is such a diss. And I'm a radical alien witch academic nerd. Oh, are you really? Are you really? So they, what they did, this, these, the frat bro and the academic nerd, witch, radical alien person, they read all about non-monogamy. They did exercises in books. They listened to loads of podcasts. They learned a strategy. They, which was adapted from business meeting models, apparently. They did that for a year and a half. A year and a half.
That's that's long foreplay.
A lot of prep before they got involved. And now what it seems to be is a really complicated WhatsApp group.
Yes.
It's really complicated.
There's a bit where someone just goes on about how many group chats there are.
It reads like a piece about the Manson family before they started killing people. I just like, all of it. Why are you reading all these books before getting your dick out? What's wrong with like pork chops, two scoops of mash and peas? Do you know what I mean? Like,
what sexual act is that?
What I mean is, can't we all just be normal? Let's just watch Dragon's Den.
Okay, I think they're going to, because like, okay, the very final quote, I think that is where they pull back the curtain and reveal what's really going on.
Mm.
It's really hard to afford a house. Some of us are thinking of moving into a place with four or five bedrooms where eight or nine of us could live together. We could share the burden of bills. Is it just more realistic? It's not about sex. It's about the fucking housing crisis again.
Yeah.
Everything is about that. If we just built enough fucking housing, we wouldn't have to have a fucking polycule, would we?
Now, here at Paper Cuts, headlines are our head start to happiness. We love those little fellas cheering up a glum story and punning their way to fun times. John, do you have any good ones today? You've got the Star, right?
I am. I'm really excited because I'm going to find out what the pussy crisis is. But first off, can I just read from the front page of the Star? The thought for the day today is, Nurse, Liz is out of bed again. Anyway, page three of the Star. Rocker Rod Stewart thinks a broken nose could be behind the distinctive raspy voice that made him famous.
Oh.
The Do You Think I'm Sexy singer, 79, who has released a new album of covers with Jules Holland called Swing Fever. Mm. More of that. Said of his voice, I didn't try to make it really raspy. It's just the way it came out. And the headline is Pick of the Pops.
As in nose picking?
As in nose, but yeah.
Ooh, I don't really like that.
No. Over the page, the subhead, cat population booms. Britain is being overrun by moggies as cash-strapped owners shun neutering. Oh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Pet lovers hit by the cost of living crisis are trying to save on vet bills by dodging de-sexing surgery, leaving more than 1 million randy cats free to roam and romp. This is actually quite upsetting.
Oh.
This is such a polycule.
And the headline is Pussy Galore.
Hey, of course it is.
Also, we have, fucking hell, guys. A man rolled over during a horny sleep and snapped his penis in two places.
Ooh!
The 27-year-old even heard a snap when he sustained the horror injury to his erect todger.
Erect todger.
Okay, can I just say the headline here is not any good and you people just clearly wanted me to read this out. The headline is, it double ouch. That's rubbish. Somebody just thought it'd be really funny to make me read that story.
All these stories seem very different in the light of the polycule, don't you think? They all seem to feed into the polycule.
God, imagine the WhatsApp group when that happens.
Ferg, you've got the Sun.
I imagine this could help us move away from the polycule.
Okay.
They've set up an AI thing where they make animals fight.
Oh, my God.
To see who would win in a fight.
Oh, okay, that's
in
fair
AI,
enough.
In the world of AI, they've tried to settle the argument, who would win in a fight. So the headline is, could a tiger beat an elephant in a fight? Mm. Not on your Nelly.
Not on your Nelly.
There's a leaderboard. Apparently, the best at fighting animal in the world is the African elephant, apparently.
Okay.
And more inside the Sun on Kyle Walker and his sixth child. He is, of course, a Manchester City player, John. Mm-hmm. So the headline
is... which sport are we on?
Football.
Association football. The headline is Six and the City.
Very good.
And then there's also a woman who won a free holiday on... Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway, And as far as I can tell, she's really angry that her dog wasn't allowed to come on the holiday with her.
Fair enough, Mum.
And the headline is Rant and Deck.
Very good. Now, several papers today are celebrating a special birthday for a special gal. Yes, it's Posh Spice's 50th birthday. Hooray! And for younger listeners, I'll just explain that Posh Spice is the same person as Victoria Beckham. Our intern genuinely didn't know this. Okay.
Can I just quote him? It's like, he said, which one is Posh Spice? Is that Amanda Holden?
Okay, so in the Mirror, there's a piece called Sex, Money and Power. And in the Mail, there's actually two pieces. One is about her marriage to David Beckham, and one gives us 50 Victoria Beckham facts because she is 50. Okay, we've been through some of these facts, haven't we, Ferg? We've got lots of them.
Yes, I've got a fun fact here. Fun fact, she's never been to Kenya. All 50 facts is that. Just a list of 50 countries. That's actually from somewhere else, not from the Mail piece. But yeah, there's lots of interesting stuff. This is something I never knew. She was engaged to the electrician Mark Wood when she was 20.
What?
Before David. Her favourite colour? Any guesses on her favourite colour?
No, what could it be? Black, maybe? No.
Think Dulux. Sunset orange.
Sunset orange? I don't think I've ever seen her in sunset orange. That's very weird.
Mm. So who, like, when asked their favourite colour, says a shade of paint? Yeah. Rather than just, like, you know, orange.
Well, it's specific. She knows what she likes. Mm. Something quite grim I found out when she was, I guess I probably saw her at the time, after she had Brooklyn Beckham in the late 90s. Brooklyn being her son, of course. Which one's Brooklyn Beckham again? Is that is that Freddie Flintoff? No, she lost the weight very quickly and went on TFI Friday and Chris Evans weighed her.
Yeah, that was a lovely point in the 90s when Chris Evans was dominating the culture and telling us all how to be.
Oh, it was shortly before he married a teenage girl, wasn't it?
Yeah, around that time. Mm. Anyway, let's not talk about him. Let's talk about Posh Spice because we love her.
Yeah, loads more facts. In her early days when she wasn't famous but she was trying to be, she spelled her name Victoria Adams with two A's at the beginning.
Okay, there's actually nothing weird about adding a superfluous letter to your name to try and make it stand out. That's actually quite normal behaviour.
I interviewed her around that time. Actually, I interviewed the Spice Girls a couple of times and she definitely told me her name was Victoria Adams because I questioned it and she said something along the line with like it's like a kind of, you know, Icelandic or Swedish like history. It was just rubbish.
She's obviously trying to get to sort of like the front of any casting list she's on.
Exactly. I think when I
was a student and thought I might be funny, I did like a sketch show, the Edinburgh Fringe, and we called ourselves ARG Productions just so it'd be the front of the fucking Fringe programme.
Exactly.
It's literally that.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's that. Her favourite flavour?
No idea.
Salt. That's not from the Daily Mail piece. The Daily Mail piece, obviously, someone's been set the challenge of coming up with 50 facts about her.
Yeah.
But at some stage, you sort of run out of them. Like, some of them are just things like, she went to the Wimbledon tennis final in 2012.
I can't believe they're not highlighting all her brilliant fashion decisions, which, as far as I'm concerned, were all great from start to finish, especially the double leather outfit that she went out with David in. That was absolutely brilliant. Uh-huh. Full head-to-toe leather. Great. And also their wedding, where they sat, I don't know if you remember this, they sat on purple thrones with kind of golden bits on them, and they put their initials on the thrones, which meant that it read VD. Just great. They've been value for money from the start. I love them.
Can I just point out the really upsetting reply I got when I tweeted about our intern not knowing who Victoria Beckham was?
Yes.
Someone said, in 2024, the release of Wannabe in 1996 is as long ago to us as the moon landing was then.
Wow. Mm.
And I thought, those numbers don't sound right. And I looked at it and it's actually slightly longer ago.
And And that's the end of today's paper cuts. Thanks to John.
Thank you.
Thanks to Ferg.
Thank you.
Remember, if you fancy listening to the show with no ads and with a special extra story, then why not join the Paper Cuts Supporters Club? Go to back.papercutshow.com. The link is in the show notes. And all our supporters get a special shout out, don't they, John?
It's yo heave ho and don't bilge on our anchor, Dominic Mayo.
It's shiver me timbers and take a caulk, Pierce Parker. And I have no idea why I've said that sentence.
It's hang the jib and watch out for hornswogglers, Alison Gray.
Hey.
Why are we being pirates?
To annoy John.
I ask this every time I'm on. And they always cut the bit where I'm complaining about the language here.
John didn't like being a cowboy, so now he's a pirate.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, it took a lot of research. I've been Miranda Sawyer, and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when the Star reports that a Korean man filed a missing persons report after his girlfriend wouldn't return his calls. Poor bloke. Luckily, we hear there's an opening in a polycule in Boston. See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Miranda Sawyer with John Elledge and Fergus Craig. The producer was Liam Tate, with assistant production by Adam Wright. Music and audio production was by me, Simon Williams, and socials were by Kieran Leslie. The group editor was Andrew Harrison, the managing editor was Jacob Jarvis, and the executive producer was Martin Boytosh. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.